Hey, what's going on? Happy Saturday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Trace Fowler from Chatterbox Reds live on YouTube. But first, let's recap Friday night's game. Reds taking on the Mets. This was game one of a seven-game homestand at Great American Ballpark. And Spencer Steer got the Reds started off in the right direction. In the bottom of the first, Steer hit a solo shot, 106.8 off the bat to left field, put the Reds up 1-0. And the game stayed 1-0 going into the fifth inning as Hunter Green was cruising. He had retired 10 straight batters, but Hunter Green gave up a walk, a single, and a hit by pitch, and the Mets had the bases loaded with just one out. Green, though, battled back. He gave up a sack fly to Francisco Lindor and then got a very weak pop-up from Pete Alonso to limit the damage, keep the game tied 1-1. Green would go on to finish the sixth inning and his final line, six innings pitch, just three hits allowed, one run, one walk, and six strikeouts. The Reds had nine base runners against Mets starter Jose Quintana, but they could only scratch across that one run on that Spencer Steer home run over 5 2/3 innings, and the game was still tied 1-1 going into the seventh. As Hunter Green exited, the Reds gave the ball to Fernando Cruz. Cruz fell behind the first batter, Jeff McNeil, 3-0, but was able to battle back and strike him out on a pitch that really should have been ball four, well out of the zone. And then Cruz really lost his control. He walked three straight batters. He was able to get Pete Alonso to hit a weak ground ball for a possible double play. The ball took a little bit of a tough hop. Eli De La Cruz had a hard time transferring the ball from his glove to his throwing hand. He made a last-second ditch, weak throw to India, but Lindor was able to beat it out. That made it 2-1 Mets. Fernando Cruz, to his credit, he struck out the Mets' hottest hitter, Francisco Alvarez, and then he got a line out to Eli De La Cruz to end the inning and limit the damage. In the bottom of the seventh, the Reds loaded the bases with two outs. Eli De La Cruz had doubled earlier in the game, but he struck out looking to end that inning. In the top of the eighth, the Mets got an insurance run when Emilio Pagan gave up a solo home run to Jeff McNeil. Reds will go quietly in the bottom of the eighth, but they did start a rally in the ninth off Edwin Diaz. Jonathan India reached on an error. Spencer Steer walked, and then Christian Encarnacion Strand came to the plate. He ended up moving the runners over on what probably should have been a double play, kind of a weird play where Francisco Lindor missed second base, but still was able to get the ball back to first base to get out CES. So with runners on second and third, one out, Jamer Candelario came to the plate. He hit a sack fly to make it 3-2, but then Jake Fraley came off the bench to pitch hit. He struck out to end the game. Reds lose 3-2, and the Reds fall to 4-3 on the season. Here's what David Bell had to say after the loss.
Gosh, it's hard to sum up that game that way. I mean, obviously, you know, when you get big hits or whatever, you know, that leads to runs. But yeah, there's so many other things that happen. In the end, of a good game, close game, we came up short. But a lot of times in those situations, you got to give their pitchers credit. I mean, they definitely made pitches, and starting from the beginning of the game, I mean, Hunter was outstanding tonight. Doesn't get much better than that. The fastball, slider, really good life on his fastball. Mainly did it with those two pitches. Their guy, Quintana, was really good. He was on both sides of the plate, changing speeds, making pitches all night. So really good pitching was pretty much the story tonight. Yeah, he was just missing with his fastball mostly early in the count. Couldn't get to the split there early. And then he went to later in the inning, and their guys did a pretty nice job of laying off. I mean, on a night, you know, that was really tough for Fernando to only allow one run right there, given all the pitches he threw and the three walks. I know he's not happy at all with it, but pretty good damage control right there, keeping us in the game on what wasn't his best night.
And here was Friday night's starting pitcher, Hunter Green.
Felt great. I feel like I made pitches well, and Luke called a great game. I feel like I was able to execute and get ahead and put guys away when I needed to.
I guess the one thing you probably wish you didn't have is that you hit Stewart with two strikes. I think it led to a run.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great pitch. It was fastball right on the corner inside, and just happened to get him. But I thought it was a fantastic pitch, and was very happy with my execution. And you know, once the ball leaves my hands, I can't really control it.
You mentioned the mindset, like, kind of cliche, but like, is that just the key to filling up the zone and pitching aggressive and doing all the things you're looking
for? Yeah, I mean, I've been watching, you know, a lot of games and other pitchers who have had who have a lot of success. And those guys, you know, they get ahead, they feel the zone. Obviously, watching Frankie in his last two starts and listening to him speak, you know, while we've been on the bench and the conversations that we've had, a lot of his success has been getting ahead and competing in the zone and then putting guys away when he needs to. So, you know, I've been trying to watch his games a lot and pay attention to him closely. And, you know, it's a great dude to watch and to kind of replicate the game after when he's getting ahead and throwing balls in the zone.
Our deep drive of the game was Spencer Steer's first inning solo home run, 106.8 off the bat, going 390 feet out to left field. And our deep drive of the game, sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production, specializing in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks, as always, to our friends at DSC. All right, checking on scores around the NL Central. Pirates lost 5-2 to the Orioles. Cubs beat the Dodgers 9-7. Brewers beat the Mariners 6-5 in a walk-off win. So the NL Central stands on Saturday morning as the Brewers at 5-1, Pirates 6-2, Cubs 5-2, Reds 4-3, and the Cardinals 4-4. All right, well, here is myself and Trace Fowler. Stick around at the end. I'll tell you about the Reds minor league action on Friday night as we had three new teams have their first game of the season. And then I'll also tell you about Saturday's starting pitching matchup.
All right, Nick, losing edition of Chatterbox Reds. Unfortunately, they fall 3-2 to the New York Mets. Mets team that's been struggling, and they were just in a situation not too long ago with a doubleheader with extra inning game. They burnt their bullpen, and you thought maybe the Reds were in a great spot here to take advantage of that. Unfortunately, they didn't. I guess there's going to be some clear storylines, quite frankly, and I think it's going to point to two or three things. You could argue about what the most important thing was, which maybe we will, but ultimately, I guess, anything that jumps out to you.
Yeah, tough. I mean, seven hits, six walks, just, you know, one of those nights, couldn't get anyone across. Jose Quintana, he's kind of an underrated pitcher over the course of his career. I think you don't think of him as one of these guys that's really been a good pitcher for a long time, but he really has. I mean, he's got a career ERA under four, and he's been doing it since 2012. So I think Chris Welch said on the broadcast, Quintana's the kind of guy that you have a comfortable over or a comfortable one for four against. You don't feel overpowered, but somehow he's just able to get outs and get it done. And the Mets, say, look, they entered baseball absolutely terrible hitting, but they did lead the National League in ERA, and you did see why a little bit tonight.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that when you strand this many runners, you're probably not going to find yourself in a position at the end of the game to win, although they kept it together for a multitude of reasons, but we'll get into all that. I don't know, Nick, where ultimately you want to start. I say we stick to the rundown as we always do. There's going to be some heavy discussion around Ellie De La Cruz, of course. There's going to be discussion around the bullpen walking some guys, and there's going to definitely be some discussion here soon on essentially how many stranded runners can you possibly have before you just say it's not your night. Hunter Green, though, he probably is going to get overlooked on a night like tonight, but not on this show. Not on this show, because I'm going to tell you something right now. Hunter Green threw the ball really well. If the offense comes out tonight, they score 5, 6, 7 runs, Hunter Green's going to be talked about about having a great start. And unfortunately, when you lose, you're not going to get the benefit of that. And I thought he ran into a little tough luck as well earlier. Kind of had a, I don't want to call it, it wasn't his defense letting him down, but ultimately, you know, maybe something else let him down. I don't know what that could have been. But ultimately, Nick, your overall thoughts on Hunter Green?
Yeah, I thought he threw the ball well. I didn't catch the exact last number, but the expected batting average for the Mets was like in the low 100s against him on the night. So maybe even pitched a little better than his six innings, three hits, one run would suggest. The one walk did haunt him in this one, but it was his only walk of the entire game, so it's hard to be too upset. Much more pitch efficient through 99 pitches in his six innings. And if the Reds win this game 2-1, we're all talking about what a great start from Hunter Green. Wow, man, he really put the Reds on his back tonight. But when you lose a game, when you strand a million runners, it kind of gets overlooked. But we try not to do that here on Chatterbox Reds.
That's right. I'm not going to overreact tonight. Like, I guess my point is I watched some good at-bats tonight, and they were hard-hit balls, and they just didn't find a hole. Like, Spencer Steer's ball, if it's, 2 feet to the right or left, two more feet to the right, I guess, you know, we're talking about a whole different situation, a whole different game. And I know that's part of baseball. It's what ifs and buts were candy and nuts. You know, we'd all have a jolly good time. And at the same time, you could go through a whole litany of things that would have happened differently if it was only 2 or 3 feet this way or that way. But I thought they had some good at-bats tonight. Now, there was a couple at-bats that were in meaningful moments that we all can agree probably didn't go the way in which many would hoped. I don't want to jump on the Ellie kind of at-bat right off the rip. But that was a tough one, clearly. But there was other opportunities. Jamer Candelario had opportunity earlier in the game. He didn't. He wouldn't have been able to cash in. You have it in front of you, I'm sure, somewhere. What did we ultimately end up stranding? Because if Jonathan India didn't tag up on, I don't want to call it a worthless tag up, but if he didn't tag up, it would have been really bad.
12, 0 for 11 with runners in scoring position.
0 for 11. Stranded 12 guys. You score 2 runs. That's the story.
Yeah, sometimes you just don't score. I mean, the Reds aren't a very good hitting team against left-handed pitching. I mean, I guess they had base runners tonight, though. Like, there's a lot of nights where you go, well, you only had 5 or 6 base runners the whole night. They had, I think, 13 base runners. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's just not your night. You know, credit to the Mets a little bit. Again, as I said, they did lead the National League in ERA coming into the game. They have some good pitchers. The four guys they ran through in the bullpen are all well above average pitchers. That's a really good bullpen. They put a lot of resources into their bullpen. They didn't put a lot of resources anywhere else this offseason, but they really did it into their bullpen, and they got the job done tonight.
They did. And I mean, listen, I Candelario, thankfully, he got himself I don't want to call it a big hit, but he got a meaningful hit that extended the inning, gave the Reds a chance to again strand runners in scoring position. But it was he's starting to get on the level for me of concerned, not so much like I wouldn't call it panic at this moment. But anytime you have somebody new, you'd like them to get off to a decent start so they don't start pressing or doing things outside of their realm. And not to say that Candelario is there yet, but it was nice to see him get a nice a double. Let's talk about the CES, the Elliott bat. CES also hit a piss missile to the shortstop that was caught, but that's here nor there. But let's talk about Ellie. Ellie obviously lacks a little confidence from the right side, and I would really like Ellie to get back to the swagger that he had. And in this part of being young, I get it, but at the same time, it's like it's easier said than done. I know I'm asking for a 22-year-old to kind of weather the storm a little better than maybe he had, but it feels like a little bit that he's allowing one mistake to compound the next, and then he's losing a little bit of this confidence, his swag that he's had. It's not overly concerning, perhaps, for me yet, but again, I would have loved for him to be a little more aggressive, rightfully so, hindsight 2020, of course, with bases loaded, right? You don't want to get cheated up there, and unfortunately, he just didn't even give himself a chance. And to be fair, Nick, not to sound like overly protective of Ellie, but that's a pitch that was the only pitch he's seen during the entire bat. It's safe to say that he just didn't see it well at all. Or he was being a little too selective, and or he was looking, you know, I don't want to say he was guessing, but at the same time, maybe he was guessing and he just guessed wrong 4 straight times. Your thought?
It does feel like Ellie has a better idea of the strike zone, like later in the at bats than on the first pitch. It feels like he'll either hack at some pitches way out of the strike zone or take some pitches right down the middle. I don't have any data to back that. I'm just kind of
sure,
you know. What I kind of feel the at-bats are. I know it's easy right now to pile on. Didn't have a double tonight. He's hit 250 with a 705 OPS. Brooks really is a left-handed pitcher, a really good left-handed pitcher, back-to-back years, sub 3 ERA. So if we really want to be that microscopic on Ellie De La Cruz and really look deep into at-bats against really good left-handed pitchers, which is clearly his struggle, I mean, it kind of is what it is. It's just you hope you just see him keep improving. You hope that as the season goes on, you know, he's able to get a couple hits in those spots. But that's not a good spot for him. It would have been a good spot for Will. It definitely would have been a good spot for Will Benson. Would have been a terrible spot for Jake Fraley. Right. So, you know, you kind of have to look at it from, I think, a couple different angles there.
Yeah, I'm not. Listen, there's going to be people that are already screaming and yelling about the switch hitting situation with him. I just don't think you can give up on the switch hitting this soon. But and I would also argue, like, if he's not really faced lefty on lefty a whole lot in his entire life, that's probably another adjustment he's going to have to make. He's not just going to do that on the fly. That's not going to happen on the fly. Like it or not, he's going to be switch hitting for the remainder of the year unless it goes really bad. And to be honest with you, it hasn't been that atrocious from the right side. So I don't know. It's just, I hate to be this way, because sometimes when you get on a post-game show, you want to have certain clear, precise takes that are hard-stanced. But what you get on the show is honest reactions, and sometimes those honest reactions aren't what maybe people want. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we're going to have to live with Ellie. And the fact of the matter is, too, I want everybody to know the air, or whatever you'd like to call it, I it's not an easy play, but I don't think he should have been there in the first place, which is why I have a tally on my board here. But my overall message is, and this is something that people are going to hate me for saying, it is also very cold outside. And I'm not trying to make that as like a big excuse, but I'll be honest with you. When you have players that are from the South and or from the Dominican, or they're from Puerto Rico, or they're from somewhere where they're used to playing in warm weather, I'm going to tell you right now, there's Northern players that I played with. I played in cold weather. And I can tell you right now, you're a different player. Like, there are times when it's that cold outside that you're a different player. And fortunately, I'm hopeful, if you want me to try to spin it and give you a half full take here, I think that when it warms up, hopefully Ellie will be a little more comfortable and we'll see a better Ellie De La Cruz. Sticking on the Reds offense, one last little point I wanted to make. You know, we're missing guys on left-handed pitching, and we know that. We can't talk about that every show. But every time there's a left-handed pitcher, you know what it is. We know what it is. Anybody that follows this team, club, closely, we all know the deal. We're missing some guys that are important against left-handed pitching. That's a fact. I mean, with all due respect to, you know, some of these guys that were running out there, Espinal, not, you know, no offense, but Matt McClain, Nuelve Marte are big deals. TJ Friedl. I get it, lefty on lefty, but TJ Friedl's splits are not that bad, lefty on lefty. He's another addition to the lineup. You know the biggest positive I'm going to give out of all of this, though, that I think is coming out of this, accidentally, is that Will Benson might start to be playing himself into a possible role of an everyday type of player. Possibly. Possibly. As you look up the analytics to tell me I'm wrong, please.
He can walk against the lefty.
Oh, shit. Gets on base.
Yeah, I mean, you need a little more than just, you know, a 320 on base percentage, but I don't know. It's a tough lineup. I mean, you're really thankful you have Spencer Steer, who I legitimately think is one of the best left-handed, one of the best batters in the sport right now against left-handed pitching. Jonathan India, really good night for him, three hits as well. He's had some weird kind of reverse splits. I think that's going to kind of even out for him. He just seems like a guy that I think is going to eventually hit lefties better than righties. I don't feel that way about, but I do think Jonathan India will settle in and be a guy that hits lefties really well as time does go on. But it's, yeah, I mean, you get past like Candelario, I mean, it's pretty tough against the lefty.
Yeah. No, listen, I think people are obviously going to be a little upset with what I said about Ellie, and I see some people saying, well, he played in Dayton and all these things. Like, I'm not arguing he's never played in cold weather. That's not my take. My take is that probably my best guess is that it's not a comfortable situation that he's found himself in, playing in extremely cold weather the last few days. And not that I am excusing all of his mistakes because of that. Trust me, I got railroaded the other day for saying I wanted to take him out on X. So you know, I'm just trying to be fair. That's all. Just trying to be a little fair to the guy. All right. Next on the rundown is going to be the Game Time app. For those that don't know, Game Time is a national company that supports our small show, and we very much appreciate that out of them. You can download the Game Time app, find the best tickets on the market. Two clicks, Nick. Two clicks. And you can have your tickets. Check out. You can click the all-in pricing. Use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y. That's C-I-N-C-Y, CINCY, for $20 off your first purchase. And that is the Game Time app. Download it on any of your platforms, mobile devices, whatever it may be. And you will also find how easy that app is, and you'll probably like it, just like me. All right. Walks will haunt. We know that in Cincinnati. It is something that is pretty much ingrained in our brain. And the problem that I have with the whole Cruz thing is that I guess for lack of a better term, my discomfort, my frustration comes from the offense and not so much. Listen, these guys are human. The Reds gave up 3 runs today. And I know that he walked 3 guys, but he also kind of got himself out of it, if we're being honest, at least in my opinion. So your overall thoughts on Fernando Cruz? You never want to walk 3 guys, but I also don't think it was like the end of the world either.
Yeah, I mean, he just has these games like this. It just, man, it really stinks to give it to the Mets, because this is a team that came in historically struggling. I mean, you can't be struggling offensively more than them. And to walk 3 batters, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah.
You see the talent with him. You see how he's able to somehow get out of that inning.
Right.
Ironically enough, the guy he struck out was the guy that came in with an OPS over 1,000, literally the only guy on the Mets that's been hitting. So he has the talent, but yeah, that's really tough. I mean, it's just you pretty much gave the game to the Mets. I mean, the Mets only scored 3 runs, but now the Mets have won 2 in a row. They had all the bad vibes in the world starting 0-5. You hope you didn't kind of, you know, make them go. I mean, they're feeling a little better than they felt about 24 hours ago this time, maybe 30 hours ago when they lost
right
the first game of that doubleheader. But yeah, that was just a brutal inning to start. But yeah, I mean, he has all the talent. It's just not really much more to say other than, you know, part of it's not his night, but you also can't do that. But you learn.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, sometimes you don't have it. And the cool thing about Cruz is that he does have stuff that can get him out of nights when, or he can limit the damage on nights when he doesn't have really control of some or command of some of his pitches. You know, he tried to throw, I think the cutter a couple times and it wasn't there. And he fortunately has that split finger to where if he can continue to throw that consistently for anywhere close to a strike, then he's got a cheat code. Alonso was looking for a first pitch fastball and he got the split finger and he missed it by like 4 feet. So, you know, Cruz, I'd rather be on the side of having good stuff and having off nights more often maybe than not than to not have good stuff at all and get yourself in a position where you got to be perfect to get outs. Off the top of my head, Antone came in. I was running around doing some things, so my apologies. Remind me here. Who did McNeil hit the home run off of?
Pagan.
Pagan, okay. So
Antone did throw a shutout inning. Yep. Walked one, didn't strike anyone out.
All right. Fair enough. What else are we supposed to say, chat? What else are we supposed to say? The truth is that it's a loss of 162. And I hate to say it like that, but some of these times they go your way and sometimes they don't. This team had chances, man. They had so many damn chances, which makes it a little disappointing because you felt like you caught a break here in the last inning, if we're being honest, right? You get a double play ball that probably is a double play, but fortunately the umpire called a safe call. They review it. It does, in my opinion, look like the bag rippled just a little bit when Lindor stepped on the bag, but they said the play stands. You get another chance. Candyman comes up there. Flies out on the first pitch, and then you ultimately have the strikeout by Fraley.
All right, well, let's get you caught up on some Reds minor league action. as it was the first night of all four teams in action. Spoiler alert, didn't go well. They went 0-4, but there was a couple good performances that we will talk about. Louisville Bats, AAA, they've been in action for over a week, but Friday night they lost to Gwinnett 6-5. Good news, though, Blake Dunn, 2-for-5. He stole two bases in this. Blake Dunn got three stolen bases on the young year. Mike Ford was 2-for-3. Reese Hines, 1-for-4 with a double. Michael Trotwine, the defensive first catcher, was 2-for-4. And then Yasver Zuleta threw a inning, only gave up one hit, and that was it. No hits, no runs, no walks in this one. Zuleta, we talked about him a little bit. Guy the Reds got off waivers from the Blue Jays, can throw 100 miles per hour. First start was great, struck out the side. Second appearance for him was really rough. He got lit up, but good to see him bounce back on Friday night. Double A, it was a brutal debut for the Chattanooga Lookouts. They lost 12-0 to Birmingham. Chattanooga committed three errors in this game. Sam Benschuster, the starting pitcher, he had a tough debut. Three and third innings pitched, six hits, two earned runs, two walks, three strikeouts. Not a whole lot of offense in this game. One guy that did have a solid debut, though, was Austin Hendrick. He was 2-for-4. And then in the bullpen, Andrew Moore, part of the return for Luis Castillo from the Mariners, dealt with a lot of injuries last year. Looked pretty good in spring. Pitched in the spring breakout games. He struck out three batters in his first inning of work. No hits, no runs, just walked one batter. To High A, the Dayton Dragons, they lost 1-0 to the Lansing Lugnuts. The Dragons have an all-star lineup, but unfortunately they only got four hits in their debut. But the story of the game was Rhett Lauder. He made his Reds professional affiliate debut, and he was outstanding. Four innings pitched, two hits, no runs, just one walk, five strikeouts. On the Dayton Dragons broadcast, they was able to catch a little bit of the first inning of that. Tom Nichols said his fastball was sitting about 93. So a great start for Rhett Lauder for his professional debut with the Reds. Can't imagine he's going to be in Dayton very long if he keeps that up. Ian Jabeau was down in Dayton making a rehab assignment in his first outing was Friday night. He looked pretty good through an inning. Gave up one hit, one walk, but struck out three batters. So Reds bullpen could certainly love to have Ian Jabeau coming off a really good 2023 season. As mentioned, not a whole lot from the offense. One standout player was Leo Balcazar, a guy who missed most of last year with injuries, but a lot of the big prospect guys really liked this guy. He was 2-for-4 with a double. Carlos Jorge, 1-for-4 with a stolen base. Sal Stewart was 0-for-4, but did steal a base. Cam Collier was 1-for-4 in his Dayton Dragons debut. Down to low A, the Daytona Tortugas looked like they were going to be the team to get a win. They led late in this one, but as they did a lot last year, they blew this game late. They lost 5-4 to St. Lucie in 10 innings. Alfredo Duno, the Reds' prize catching prospect, making his Tortugas debut, he went 1-for-4 with a walk. Ricardo Cabrera, 0-for-4 with a walk. He struck out three times. Carlos Sanchez, 0-for-4 with a walk and a stolen base. Esmith Pineda, a prospect on the rise, he was 2-for-5. And then Connor Burns, the Reds' catching prospect, he homered in this game and drove in three and also had a walk. All right. Well, Reds back in action Saturday, 4:10 p.m. This game will be on Bally Sports Ohio. Reds coming off that Apple TV game on Friday night. For the New York Mets, it'll be Luis Severino. You might remember this guy was a really good pitcher for the Yankees. He finished third in the AL Cy Young voting back in 2017 and then ninth in 2018. But he had Tommy John surgery in February 2022, suffered a groin injury in his rehab coming back in 2021, had a lat strain in 2022, and an upper body injury in 2023. So just been an unfortunate couple years for Severino with injuries. Mets giving him a chance, though. They signed Severino to a one-year, $13 million contract. They got him early. This was back on November 30th. So Mets kind of thinking, I think along with the Reds digging Frankie Montas, Mets hoping Luis Severino can be something similar to what we saw of Frankie Montas so far, but it's still obviously very early in the season. Severino's debut this season, through five innings against the Brewers, gave up 11 hits, gave up six runs, but only three of them were earned. Severino over his career has a 3.29 ERA in three starts against the Reds. Last year only made one appearance against the Reds. It was at Great America Ballpark. He pitched four and two-thirds innings, only gave up one run. And a couple notable Reds against Severino. First of the bat, Jamer Candelario. He's just 1-for-10 with five strikeouts. Santiago Espinal is 1-for-6. Stuart Fairchild is 2-for-3. Luke Maley, 3-for-10. And Spencer Steer is 1-for-2 with a double. For the Reds, it'll be Nick Martinez coming off a okay first start. He was really good through the first four innings against the Nats, but then ended up struggling in the fifth inning. Nick Martinez had a great spring, so hoping he can have a really good outing on Saturday. And this will be Nick Martinez's first career start against the Mets. He's just made four relief appearances throughout his career. All right, well, thanks so much, as always, for listening to Chatterbox Reds. Make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to this podcast. Also to Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. We have all kinds of great content up there. Leave us a five-star review. That really helps us out. I would appreciate that. And tell a friend about Chatterbox Reds, as we always say. And there's a lot of Reds fans out there that probably haven't heard about our show. So if you like what you're listening here, tell them, let's continue to grow this this community. I think there's some good days ahead for our Cincinnati Reds this season. All right, we'll have a great Saturday. We'll talk on Chatterbox Reds Live about 6:30 on YouTube. If you missed that, of course, we'll, as always, we'll be in your podcast feed early on Sunday morning. Go Reds!